Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Carl Seibel's debut short story collection, Hey, You A-Holes, is an energetic and exhilarating exploration of society's misfits. Soft-hearted alcoholics, cunning factory workers, and military veterans lost at sea. Carl served in the U.S. Navy for 7 years. He has clearly studied people and developed his ability to create charismatic characters that you can easily identify with. His stories are suitably Seibel-esque. They include a junkyard worker who is haunted by the death of a special cat, dinosaurs that offer life advice, and a wine-red Saturn ion that melts at a gas station. Kyle believes in load-bearing sentences. He doesn't waste a single word. Unlike certain radio hosts who are rather verbose, you know who I'm talking about. So why did Kyle decide to use Hey You A-Holes as the title of his debut collection?
The name came from, you know, one of my best friends, Todd Dakin, I was trying to figure out what to call the collection way back when. This was something like 5 years ago. And I was in between a bunch of different names, all kind of bad, nothing really that stuck to me. And Todd suggested a line from a story that actually is no longer in the collection, but it was pulled from a story that felt very critical to the manuscript at the time. And it was a throwaway line, a throwaway piece of dialogue, but it seemed to say something larger about the collection, about the collection of voices I was trying to capture. And there was no more deliberation after that moment. It was simply called that going forward. It was called Hey You A-Holes.
There you go, yeah. You attended the University of Missouri for undergrad. Then you spent 7 years serving in the Navy, including being deployed overseas. How helpful was your Navy career in terms of writing your short stories?
Indispensable, I think. It changed the way that I saw pretty much everything going forward. It was a complete reframing of how I understood people in the world. I don't know if I would have been inspired to write, or at least initially write, if I hadn't been presented with the cast of characters I met in uniform. You know, when I first sat down to write, the first real story I wrote was Master Guns, which is the last story in the collection. And I really just started to write from this experience of being detailed to a chaplain on my first deployment and the people that kind of just popped up in my life as I remembered it. And I don't know if I would have found an inroad so rich like that if I hadn't been exposed to those kind of personalities. And I think there's a strong narrative tradition in the Navy. There's this jokes are stories, and jokes are so important to life on the ship. Maybe I would have found another way to it, but it was the most intuitive path for me.
So lucky for us, your avid readers, that you did serve in the Navy. I'm very intrigued to learn about your work in advertising. How helpful was that experience in writing your short stories?
Yeah, again, I think this is another critical point in my development as a writer. I left the Navy and I started working in an advertising agency. A couple weeks after I left, I was connected to that world through a couple of friends and just happened to get in a job interview. And it was a boot camp for writing. And I think what more it prepared me for than anything craft related was how it thickened my skin for feedback in a way that made it feel like a superpower when I started writing short stories, because you have to be just so okay with so much rejection. And in the advertising world, as a junior copywriter, you're constantly pitching. Your ideas are so cheap because you can have like fill a page with 50 of them. And I think that kind of volume, that kind of access to a creative energy was really helpful in especially the shorter of the short stories that I've written, because it teaches you how every word needs to be load-bearing.
Yeah, load-bearing words. It's not just like four load-bearing walls. Every sentence is load-bearing. I'm glad you mentioned that. Your short stories, to me, seem so different from so many of the other short stories I've read. And your characters are well, I don't want to say this, but I mean, some of them are kind of like not doing so great kind of thing. And their characters include soft-hearted alcoholics, clever factory workers, and military veterans lost at sea. How do you go about creating these characters?
I think I always start with some kind of an anecdote or something that I've picked up along the way or an image that I've seen that sticks with me. It's usually not anything too much more mystical than that. I usually will start with some kind of a premise or a concept or a sketch of a scene. And I really will just kind of let the story tell the next part of it. I feel like when I'm so certain that I know what I want to say, the story ends up being very bad, and I used to have to work on it for much more. I think there's a kind of channel that you can operate in as a writer where you're not totally focused on getting out what you think you need to get out on the page, and this other kind of free writing, you know, without kind of any intention at all. It's almost like this neutral gear where you can kind of access both worlds at the same time. And I think that's where the most interesting stuff happens for me on the page.
Yeah, and probably the most interesting part on the page for us readers as well, I think. The vibes of some of your stories make me think that this is what it would be like if Raymond Carver and Charles Bukowski collaborated on a short story. Are Carver and Bukowski influences on your writing?
Carver is huge for me.
Me too,
Carver
yeah.
I was given what we talk about when we talk about love as a 17-year-old living in the suburbs of St. Louis, and it felt so supremely adult and cool and like a transmission from another planet of where things mattered more. It felt so real to me, even though it was just as foreign to me as a science fiction story. But I was so drawn to the heart and the humility of those stories. And I've really returned to the collection. I think I've probably read it every year since, so it's been almost 25 years since I've read that book. And I know the stories intimately. So I think the inspiration for my approach to short fiction is definitely Carver inspired. And then Bukowski, less so, but I remember I'm a big fan of his. I think that, you know, I'm remembering Factotum being a really important book for me in college and probably had a background influence that I wouldn't have realized.
Yeah, definitely. Who are your other literary influences?
I really tend to grab from a variety of influences. I try to be pretty well-read or widely read. And I think that my foundations are Raymond Carver, Dennis Johnson, and I really think more recently, Phil Klei, who wrote Redeployment, and Adrian Bonenberger, who wrote a collection of short stories called The Forgotten Soldier. Those two books, Redeployment and The Forgotten Soldier, those really, really set me on my path of how to write about the military in my own way. And I think that both those writers understand something about military life that goes beyond the drama or the melodrama of some military fiction. And it really inspired me to peel back a layer of my own work and really interrogate what I'm trying to do and to make my own contribution in my own unique way.
Yeah, very well said. You wrote a story for Scaffold Lit called The World's Biggest Sleepover. I'm almost contractually obligated to ask you about this story because it takes place in Brookfield, Wisconsin, in Alex Knopf's basement. Alex, we hope you're listening. He's a big fan of the show. What inspired the story?
So Alex Knopf is a real individual. It's a she, and oh. It was a friend of my wife's. And my wife is the one who has the Wisconsin connection. She was born and raised in Brookfield. And I was spending some time with some of her friends in Chicago a couple summers ago, and they were talking and about this big sleepover that they had. And I just be kind of, they made t-shirts for it, and it was called The World's Biggest Sleepover. And there was something really funny about it because all the women that were talking about it, now they're all adults, and they all had different versions of what happened that night. And no one could agree on what was referred to as the world's biggest sleepover. The people were confused about, oh, is this occasion? Oh, is somebody else's birthday? It all just kind of formed together into this way of how we think about growing up and how we remember things. And so that was the impetus for the story. And I changed it to be about boys because I had no idea what happens at girls' sleepovers and have a little bit of an idea about what happens at boys' ones. So that was mercenary, the choice to make there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and very well done. You have written some stories about your Navy career. Are these more personal stories? Are they easier to write or more difficult? And do you have a favorite?
I would say that the Navy stories, the military stories are some of my more cherished pieces, that they mean a lot to me. I think because they are not based on my own personal experiences, or rather, I've chosen to not center myself in a lot of those stories, instead putting other people that I've come across or creating characters, an amalgamation of characters that of people who have had those experiences. I think my time in a TPU, a transient personnel unit, at the end of my Navy career, it spawned the story Terminal Leave, because I just spent all day kind of doing admin work for people who were on their way out, people who just have really stopped caring about military bearing or regulations or anything like that. Those individuals, they there's a sense that like they can't really do anything that to change their station. They're just waiting for rulings to be passed down or things to happen or budget to be freed up. And they're given pretty much free rein of the base, and they get into trouble all the time. And I've just found these mini capers of these little these little mini criminals so fascinating that I wanted to tell the story of that really specific and very unusual kind of phase of a military career, which is it's a twilight, but it's also, you know, this really in-between phase that just never feels comfortable for anyone.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. I was fascinated to discover how you go about choreographing your characters for the scenes in your stories. How do you make that happen?
It's very intuitive for me. I don't really have access to a suite of creative tools like someone might have that's been to an MFA. I go by instinct and feel a lot, and I will study other writers to see how they've done that. I think someone who writes action very well is Dennis Johnson. His stories have so much movement and motion in them, and not just movement in them, but to and from scenes. And the way that he exits and enters scenes in his stories, it's brazen the way that he moves, but he's a genius and makes it work. So I think a lot of times some of that I pull from Johnson. And the other one that I'm a big fan of is Cormac McCarthy. Blocks a scene in written form like no one else. I think that it's maybe a little bit trite to say that you need to thinking about the perspective like a camera, but I think that I so much of media is visual now, and I think so much of my influences as a writer are from TV and movies, that it makes sense to think visually like that for me.
Yeah, and that came from I heard that in the Tyler Dempsey podcast that you were a guest on, that, yeah, you use this perspective like a camera in many ways, and that's how you set up where the characters are, how it's blocked, and you describe everything from the vantage point and use that as a flashlight to find your way around the story. I love that idea, using a flashlight to find your way around the story. Can you give us an example of how you have used your flashlight to find your way around one of your stories?
I think a good example of that is in the story A New Kind of Dan, which is unique in the collection because it's the collective first person. It's a town speaking as a we. And I think for that story, it came from a series of stories I was writing one summer about this guy named Regular Dan, a character named Regular Dan. None of it felt like it was working. I knew that there was something there, but none of it felt right. So what I did was, I'm going to kill Regular Dan. I'm going to kill this guy. I'm going to write the death of Regular Dan. And I couldn't quite get there from the perspective of Regular Dan himself, or even a close third person perspective. But then I started to think about this town around him and the what I wanted to have happen to Regular Dan, which is to kind of like ascend, you know, his regularness. And it made so much sense as I started to put the flashlight on the shoulder of the townspeople and started to see around the story like that, like then it started to really fall into place. And then I started to understand whose story it was, and that unlocked everything in that piece. So I think that's a good example of kind of using a flashlight, because when it works, it clicks, and that's when I'm off to the races.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Thank you very much for joining us today, Kyle Seibel. Congratulations on Hey You A-Holes. It is an awesome achievement. I can't wait for your next book.
Thank you so much.
Kyle Seibel's debut short story collection is Hey You A-Holes. Find out more about Kyle and his short stories at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Andrew DeYoung, Sarah Jarosz, and Kyle Seibel.
They have a lot of zany stuff on this program, don't you think?
Beta is available on Apple Podcasts or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. And you can keep up with us during the week or listen to past episodes on our show page at wpr.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
It was created for WPR by yours truly and Adam Friedrich.
I don't wish to continue this friendship at the moment.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
There's nothing to be nervous about.
Our executive producer is Brad Colbert.
You're smart. You have a good job.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
Just be yourself. You're a friggin' prince.